Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, just to review the Mishnah again. The Mishnah begins, Achat Omeret Meit, V'achat Omeret Lo Meit. These are two wives of a single individual. One of them says that he passed away, and the other one says that he didn't pass away. Zosh Omeret Meit, the one who says that he passed away, Tinasei, she can marry based on that testimony. V'titol Ktuvata, and she can also collect on her Ktuvah. Zosho meret lo meit, and the one who says that he didn't die, lo tinasei, she cannot marry, velo titol ktubata, and she also cannot collect on her ktubata. Each woman is believed with regards to her statement, even though the statements in a sense are contradictory. Nevertheless, each woman is believed about her own particular statement, and the one who says he passed away, she's granted nemanut like any other wife, and she can go off and marry and collect on her ktuba. The one who said he didn't die, she is bound by her words. She made herself into a chaticha surah, and therefore she's bound by that, and she will not be able to marry, and she will not be able to collect on her ktubah. Achat omeret meit, v'achat omeret neharag. So the two wives, one says that he died, and one said that he was killed. Rabbi Meir omer ho umachishot zo et zo, harielu lo yinasu. Because they contradict each other, they may not get married. You have a problem here. They are saying something different, and therefore we have to suspect that there's something wrong with their edut. You have an edut mukheshet here. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Amrim, ho vizo vizo modot she'en kayam, since there is a common denominator between them, that is, that he's not alive, yinasu, they can get married. And I mentioned yesterday that there's probably a fundamental machloket here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, as the nature of this edut that happens here, this ed echad that is neman, Rabbi Meir clearly is viewing this through the prism of edut, and therefore when you have two people who come to testify in edut, if their information doesn't line up, they are problematic. They are not good edim anymore. We worry about the fact that they are mishaker. We worry about the fact that it's an edut mukheshet, and therefore they're pasul. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon are probably working under the rubric of Nemanut or Beirur Milta. These individuals, these Edim, they're clearly not Edim because we accept Sulim, we accept an Isha. What we are trying to get from them is the bottom line. What happened to this individual? That's the Beirur Milta. Is he alive or is he dead? As far as we're concerned, from their testimony, we know that he is dead. And that Beirur Milta just took place. The common denominator between the two statements is that he's dead. How he died? Okay, there we have an issue about how exactly he died. Or why he's dead right now, was he killed or did he die? But in terms of what the information we're trying to find out, that's irrelevant. Because we really don't care how he died, we only care that he is dead. And they're both giving us that same piece of information, and therefore there will be nemanut, gabe, that common denominator between them, that he is dead, and therefore they can marry based on the information they bring. Eid omer meit, v'eid omer lo meit. One eid says that he died, eid omer lo meit, the other eid says they didn't die. Shall merit mate. One woman said that he died. He shall merit lo mate. Harizu lo tinasei. They cannot get married there. Now, how is this different or differentiated, number one, from the first case in our Mishnah, as well as the Mishnah beforehand? Why in the previous Mishnah did we say when an Eid Echad says mate and she got married, and then another one comes along and says lo mate, we don't believe them, so we spoke about this yesterday, the difference between Batachat and Zecher Zeh. When Edim comes, Zecher Zeh, once you've been mitkabel, the first aid, that aid takes on the superpowers that Ula invested in them, which is that they are considered like two Edim. And then when the second aid shows up, they don't have the power to undermine the statement of the first aid. On the other hand, if they come to Bat Achat, if they come at the same time, then before we issue a psak, we have to weigh both pieces of information. At that point, we're not going to go with one over the other. You really have an Edut Mukheshet in that sense. And we will not paskin like one over the other. So there'll be a big difference between Bevat Achad versus Bezechar Zeh. So the time or the frame in which they come makes a difference in the outcome of the Psak Halacha over here. And now the Gemara says, Taima de Amra Lomate. From the ratio of the Mishnah, it makes it sound like when the co-wives show up, the reason that she's not allowed to get married is because she said he didn't die. Haishtika, had she been silent, Tinasei, she would have been able to get married. That's the diuk you're making out of the ratio. Otherwise, it just should say, Echat Omeret Shemeit, Ve'achat Shoteket, and one of them is silent, that would have been enough to give us the information to say that she can't get married when she's silent. The fact that the Mishnah specifically said that she disagreed, that is what disqualifies her, implying that if she didn't disagree, she would be covered by the statement of the co-wife. But how could that be? Ha'in tzara mi'ida l'chaverta. 2 Mishnayot ago, we already learned that a co-wife may not testify on behalf of her friend. So why is her edut here believed versus the co-wife? So Mar says, lomait itztrichale. We need lomait. The chiddush here is that we believe her by the lomait. It's true that you could have said the same thing, mait itztrichale. That we believe the co-wife who says that he died. That's also a chiddush. The fact that we believe the co-wife that said he died, despite the fact that there's another woman saying, lomait, that already is a chiddush in itself. But, as the Rishonim point out, if that was the chiddush of the first piece of the Mishnah, they should have collapsed that with the middle piece of the Mishnah. Because that's the case where we have edut mucheshet, and yet we say that it's fine. So the whole chiddush was that she said mate, and the other one said lo mate. Then it should have been included in the case of mate and ne'erag, because the din is the same in that case. The fact that it's split it out already tells you there must be a different chiddush in the ratio. What's that different chiddush in the ratio? Lo mate itztrichalei. Sachad atcha mino ha-mait. That he really did die. So then why is she saying that he didn't die? The kilkula de tsarahi de mikavna. She wants to mess up, ruin the life of her co-wife. She and her co-wife probably did not have an easy time together. And this is her ultimate revenge, is to say that the husband didn't pass away. By saying that, she locks her in to not being able to marry, and it ruins her life in that way. She has a certain amount of vindictiveness here, and she's willing to do it at the expense of herself. Because when she says lo mait, that means that it not only affects her co-wife, it affects her as well. She will not be able to get married. But the Megillah says that she nevertheless has that intention, and says, v'tamot nafshi im plishtim. Tamra, let me die with the plishtim. Shimshon says, with regards to his killing of himself, taking down the plishtim with him, if I'm going to go, they're going to all go with me. And that's the way this woman says. I'm going to go down, I'm going to take her down with me. And so she's willing to sacrifice, in a sense, herself in order to penalize her co-wife. The girsa in the Gemara is v'tamot nafsha, because in our case, it makes more sense today nafsha. The pasuk itself says nafshi, so the proper quote of the pasuk is nafshi, but in the context here, the Gemara is rewording the pasuk to say v'tamot nafsha about this woman, this co-wife, saying it. That's why the change in the girsa. Kamash v'lan, that we do not say that. The truth is, there is evidence in the Mishnah of the fact that she is lying over here. Because if she really believes that her husband is alive, then why does she go to court to say anything? Her co-wife is going in there and saying her husband is dead. So this other woman shows up and says, no, he's not dead. What benefit does she have in showing up in court and saying that he is not dead? As far as she's concerned, she can't marry either because she's willing to say that he's not dead or because she doesn't say anything. So by definition, has no impact on her. Her testimony only has impact on one person. That's the co-wife. So when she shows up in court and says, lo mate, it's clear that she's affecting the co-wife, not herself. So there's reason to believe here that this woman is coming to do something that is not based on the truth, but rather detrimental to her co-wife. Because again, if she didn't care and she really wanted to mess her up, in a sense, she should have just let it go. And she would have gotten married. Meantime, the husband might show up, and it actually be better for her. The fact that she's going in there to say lo mait, there is some circumstantial evidence that she really has something out for this woman, and that's why she's going in there to say that. So there's actually an incredible hava mina now, which is the hava mina would have been, even though she said lo mait, he didn't die, we would have let her get married because of this situation. Kamash malon, that we say no, she can't get married. That's what it says. What type of chiddush is that? She's shavya nafsha chatichai isura. She made herself into Isur, she can't get married, doesn't matter what happens now. Based on that, Tosafot goes on to say that even if she gives us an excuse later on for why she said it, she can't get married. She can't unwind what she said, because we're really worried about this woman and how she is presenting herself. So even if later on she decides that, you know, wait, he really did die, we're not going to let her unwind her testimony. That's the Kamash Malon of the Gemara. Kamash Malon, that lo mate, that affects her, does not affect her co-wife, and even if she explains why that she said lo mait, we won't either change that or we won't believe her anymore. And therefore, she is knocked out of the picture for that reason. Achat omeret, so here we have the case where One says Ne'arag, one says mate, and there we have the machloke between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, V'liflog Rabbi Meir bereisha. Why doesn't Rabbi Meir argue in the reisha as well? Which is in the first case in the Mishnah, you also have two women saying different things, and that should be result. It should result in an edut mukheshet, and it should also not be believed. So Amar Rabbi Elazar b'machloket shnuya ein ochanami. The first part of the Mishnah, the reisha of the Mishnah, is also subject to the machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimoni, and therefore the authors of the first position are Stam, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan says, Afilu Deima Rabbi Meir. Even Rabbi Meir can agree in the reisha. Baha Afilu Rabbi Meir Modeh, because in this case, Rabbi Meir is Modeh, to call Lomate, Beidut Isha Lav Hachashahi. That whenever you come on and say Lomate, it has no relevance in terms of Eidut. Now that's only true, and again, in a case where you believe that the first Eidut was already accepted, and then the Lomate comes afterwards. So then you would have to explain that this reisha case, Echad Omeret Meit, V'Echad Omeret Lo Meit, is B'Zeh Achar Zeh. And in the case of B'Zeh Achar Zeh, then even Rabbi Meir might be Modeh, because you've elevated the first testimony of Meit to the level of two Edim. And therefore, the Lo Meit has no relevance anymore. And that's why Rabbi Meir would agree. So in saying that it's Zeh Achar Zeh, and they accepted the first Edut, maybe even Rabbi Meir agrees there, because you don't have a Chasha after the fact. It's none. But what about the third case? There's a third case in our Mishnah. The third case is Edomer mate, Vedomer lo mate, Isha merit mate, Visha merit lo mate, Arizo lo tinase. So in that final case, we say that she cannot get married. Here you have Edim that are mukhashim. So who is the author of that position? Bishlam al Rabbi Elazar, Stamak Rabbi Meir. Then this is Rabbi Meir's position, where you have Edim that are mukhashim, then we say, or mukheshet, then we agree that it's no good. So now, if you do that, you'll have a reisha B, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. The mitziah, the middle case, tells you of their machloket. And the seifa is Tam, Rabbi Meir. And that's how you would explain it. Elo Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. Rabbi Yochanan, who's the author of that last position? Because supposedly, Rabbi Meir, in these types of cases, agrees that it's not problematic. So Kasha. Then you have to say it's a Kasha, it's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan now. Technically, you could have argued that the first case is a case of Zeh Achar Zeh, and the second case here is a case of Bevat Achat. And Shammai actually takes up this position and reconciles the Mishnah in that manner. Nevertheless, for that reason, Tosafot, according to the Rabbeinu Yoel, says the entire Mishnah is talking about a case of Bevat Achat, and that the Reisha is differentiated from this Seifa. The Reisha, which is talking about Tzarot, there, even if they come Bevat Achat, we believe the first woman, and we do not believe the second woman, because of the Kamash Malan that we had above. That the second woman is not believed in the face of her co-wife, because we are afraid that she's just acting to ruin the chances of her co-wife. So we exclude her testimony completely, and the one who came and said Lomait is believed in this case. Whereas the Seifa of the Mishnah, where it talks about Isha Omeret Meit V'Isha Omeret Lomait, in that case, it's Bevat Achat, but Bevat Achat, where there is no tzara that is found there. And since it's a case where there is no tzara, therefore, Bevat Achat are not believed. And that is what Tosfot says, what Rabbi Yochanan meant, that the chol lo meit, beidut isha lav hachoshahi, that's not in general, that's talking about the case of tzarot. The Gemara's question of Rabbi Yochanan is the last case then, because in that last case it says isha versus isha, and eid versus eid. In that case, what is the explanation of Isha versus Isha? Rashi says it even by Tzarot, even if they are co-wives. Because if it's just two women, one woman against another, that's the same as aid against aid. So it must be talking about even about Tzarot in this latter case. And that is what the challenge to Rabbi Yochanan is. So Rashi explains the Gemara that the way that we did.
Now, if that is the case, where's Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon? If you said it was Bevat Achat, then maybe they could agree with the Seifa. And if it's differentiated from the Reisha case. The Reisha case is a case of Bezeh Chazeh. The Mitzia case is a case of Bevat Achat. And even so, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon say the common denominator is that he's dead, so that's fine. And the last case was a case of Bevat Achat, where therefore we would not accept him even according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The answer is likely that the Mishnah does not differentiate in that way. I mean, it was two different Mishnayot, you could argue that. But within a single Mishnah to say that one is Bezeh Chazeh and one is Bevat Achat is hard to argue. And therefore, it must be that the cases are all either bevat achat or bezeach hazeh, and the din should be the same in all these cases. Another thing to note is that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon give the reason for their machlokah. They say because the common denominator is. That means that in the ratio, they should also not think that it's okay, because their reasoning is that it is a common denominator. In the ratio, you don't have a common denominator. So why should you be believed in the ratio? I mean, the Gemara's question itself is somewhat interesting, because even if you answer that the machlokah persists in the ratio, how does it persist in the ratio? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon said their reasoning is common denominator, that doesn't exist in the ratio.
The Tosafot Yeshanim suggests,
so what you have to say is that when Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon said a common denominator, they were answering for Rabbi Meir, in the sheet of Rabbi Meir, at least you should agree here that there's a common denominator, even though you disagree in the other case. But their main reasoning might have nothing to do with that, or they might have another sheet that affects the ratio, because their reasoning does not apply to the entire Mishnah. All right, next Mishnah. Isha shalchahi ubala l'midinat hayam, uba v'amra meit bali. So here again, this is something we encountered already. A woman goes overseas with her husband, comes back and says, my husband passed away, tinasei, she's allowed to get married, v'titol ktubata, and she can collect on her ktuba, she is nemenet, the gabei herself, v'tzarata asura. On the other hand, her co-wife is restricted, because, like we saw in the Mishnayot beforehand, that the Mishnah said she's not believed with regards to her co-wife. So she is believed with regards to herself, she is not believed with regards to her co-wife. Haita bat Yisrael l'kohen. If the co-wife was married to a Kohen, and they were both married to a Kohen, she said that Kohen passed away, but she's not believed with regards to the co-wife. So if she's not believed according to the co-wife, for the co-wife is still technically married to this husband. So therefore, tochal b'truma, divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says she may eat truma, because we're assuming she's still married to the Kohen, she cannot get married, she doesn't get her tuba, so she can also eat truma. Rabbi Kiva omer, ein zo derech, mitziata mide avera. That's not the way to take her away from doing an avera. Achete asura li nase, basura milechob bitruma. Until she's asura to eat the truma as well. So here you have a safek. As far as the woman who comes to testify, she's believed vis-a-vis herself. Her husband passed away, so she gets her ktuba, she gets to go out and marry, and she's out of the truma. She no longer gets truma unless, of course, there are children here. And if they're children, there's no question in terms of the truma. With regards to her co-wife, she's not believed. So there are two possibilities with regards to the co-wife. Either the husband has really passed away. If he really did pass away, then she should be muteret to marry, get her ktuba, but she should also be a surah in truma. The other possibility is that he's still alive, and she's trying to ruin the life of her co-wife, and therefore we don't believe her, and he really is still alive. Well, if he's still alive, she cannot get married. She cannot get her ktuba, but she does get to eat truma. So what Rabbi Tarfon says is, be consistent. If we don't believe her, we don't believe her across the board. And that means that she gets to eat truma and not leave the estate and not get her ktuba because she's still married. She's still married. She gets her truma. Rabbi Kiva says, no. We have to be choshesh for the words of the co-wife. We can't assume she's definitely lying. Even though there's a likelihood or there's a reason to believe that she's lying, nevertheless, over here, we won't say that, except that we will be choshesh that she's lying. So if we're choshesh she's lying, we say, okay, if he's alive, she can't get married. But we have to also be choshesh to the fact that he might be dead. If that's the case, then she can't eat truma. And then you have to be machmir both tzadim to protect the co-wife from this chashash of whatever the other woman said. So now another case. This is a case that we quoted before in the Gemara on Kuf Yud Zayin in yesterday's daf. Amra meit ba'ali, v'achar kach meit chami. She comes in and testifies that my husband passed away, and then my father-in-law passed away. They were overseas. She, her husband, and her father-in-law were overseas. She comes back and says, my husband passed away, and then my father-in-law passed away. Tina sevi titok tubata. As far as she is concerned, she is believed, she has nemanut, legabei herself, and therefore she can marry and take her ktuba. Now then, when it comes to her chamuta, her mother-in-law, asura, she is restricted because she's not believed. She is one of the women where we do not believe her when she comes and testifies to legabei her mother-in-law, because we're afraid she's trying to get rid of her mother-in-law, so that when they come back home, her mother-in-law won't be in the picture anymore. So, haita bat yisola kohen, what happens if her mother-in-law was married to a kohen? Well, if she was married to a Kohen, her husband is also a Kohen here. Could be a stepfather. But assuming that these kohen, her son's also kohen, but she's permitted to get married. She gets her tuba. She's not going to eat in Shuma because she's no longer married. On the other hand, for the mother-in-law who's still married because she said that the father-in-law had passed away, but we don't believe her, then she can eat tochal b'truma. She can eat truma, divrei Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon again says over here, she can eat truma. Rabbi Kiva Omer, ein zo derech mutzi amidai evira. This is not the way to solve the problem for the co-wife, to protect her. Achdei asurali nasei, vasurali mechol b'truma. You have to prevent it from both sides. She can't get married, maybe he's alive. She can't eat truma because maybe he is dead, and therefore she is in a limbo state. Basically, she gets locked out on both sides. She doesn't have permission to get married, but she also doesn't have permission in staying in the estate to eat from the truma, because we're not sure she's still married to a kohen. So there is an additional chiddush here, which I mentioned yesterday in the Gemara, which is that over here, she's no longer her mother-in-law. After she declares her husband to be dead, they're not related anymore, and she's not really her mother-in-law. Despite that fact, we still say that the relationship is alive, and we worry about her lying, because she might do all this to knock her mother-in-law out of the picture. She'll come back and say that her husband died, her father-in-law died, and then the mother-in-law goes out and gets married. And then they show up, and now the mother-in-law is out of the picture because teitzei mizu mizu, and she could get married to her husband again. So we worry about the fact that even though technically she's disconnected, their relationship, by saying that her husband passed away, we believe that she might be lying about the whole picture, and the mother-in-law is still really her mother-in-law, and she's trying to do this in order to ruin the life of her mother-in-law. Mer says b'tzricha. Why do we need two cases in the Mishnah? We have a machloket Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva, and the machloket Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva over here manifests itself in two cases. One in the case of the co-wives, and one in the case of the daughter-in-law, mother-in-law. And we say the same din in both cases. Why do I need both? Just say one of them, and I would have known the other. De'i itmar hach kamaita. Had we only mentioned the first case by co-wives, b'hakam Rabbi Tarfon, over there Rabbi Tarfon says we don't believe her, mishom detzara de gufa. Because over there, there's a higher likelihood that this woman will be more vindictive because of the competition, the nature of the competition between them. They are co-wives. That means that they are competing over the love of their husband and even the physical attention of their husband. And therefore, there's a very, very high likelihood that she wants to rid herself of the co-wife. And therefore, she'll be extremely vindictive. And there's more reason to believe that she's lying. And that's what Rabbi Tarfon basically says. We think she is lying, period. And we would say as if she didn't say anything, or as if there's no believability in her. And that's why she's granted the right to continue to eat truma, because we don't believe the co-wife at all. But about chamuta, tzara mile de alma, by the case of her mother-in-law, where the competition or the friction really comes from talking or what they say about each other, or how they tell on each other, of the relationship issues that are not directly involved with competition over a single individual, but rather competition over who is the primary focus of the son or the husband. So there, we would say maybe, ema modile the Rabbi Akiva. Maybe Rabbi Tarfon would agree over there. We don't assume she's really so vindictive that she's lying. There's less reason to believe that she's lying. And maybe he'll agree with Rabbi Kiva over there. Will be choshesh that maybe she is telling the truth. The other way around, v'itmar b'haf, you only told me the second case, b'haf, kamar Rabbi Kiva. Oh, in that case, the Rabbi Kiva says she's probably not lying, and therefore we will say she cannot eat the truma. Aval b'haf, in the case of co-wives, where there's a lot of reason to believe that she's very vindictive and she is lying, there we will assume she's lying. Maybe modulei the Rabbi Tarfon. Maybe he agrees with Rabbi Tarfon over there and says she can eat truma as if this is a complete lie. Tzricha. That's why we need both cases. Cases to teach you both extremes, both from Rabbi Tarfon's position and Rabbi Kiva's position, that they maintain their positions even in the face of the differentiation between these two cases. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmo, l'locha ki Rabbi Tarfon. L'locha is actually like Rabbi Tarfon, that we are consistent in the case. If we don't believe her and she can't get married, then she is fully married and she can eat truma. Amar Abaye, afana nami tanina. We also have a Mishnah, which will come up on the second half of today's daf, which is, Nitan li ben bibni deat ayam. I had a child born to me overseas. Mate bini, then my child passed away. Vachar kach, mate bali, then my husband passed away. Ne'emenet. She is believed in that case. In that case, when she left us, she left with the husband, no children. So the chazakah that she has is that she is available for yibum. And if she tells us that her husband passed away, that's what we would have assumed, that she is open for yibum. She comes along and says, I had a son overseas. But then she also says that son died prior to my husband, predeceased my husband. So in that case, she hasn't changed her status quo. As far as the status quo is concerned, she was chayevet in Yibum, and she still is chayevet in Yibum. The fact that she mentioned a child is a pesha asur, a pesha hitir. She told us about the child, but she also told us the child is gone. So as far as we're concerned, it's as if the child didn't exist, and she's not nemenet in that case of the child, and she will just be in the same position she was before. On the other hand, bali v'achakach b'ni, my husband predeceased the child, ain't a nemenet. There she's not believed, because now she's changing the status quo. She left with the assumption that she was chayevet in Yibum, because she just left with the husband. Now she comes back and says, I had a husband, I also had a child, and the child died after the husband, that means she's put turah from Yibum. That we will not grant her, because she's nemenet legabe her husband, she's not nemenet legabe the child and all the other information, because she's changing the chazaka. So b'choshishin ledvara, but we still worry about what she said. Therefore, we only let her be b'choletzit v'lo mityabemet, that she's allowed to do chalitza, but not Yibum. So we worry about what she says because she really made herself into a chaticha surah now, which is she said she had a child and that child lived beyond the death of her husband, and that means she's turah from Yibum. So we will force her to deal with the Yibum issue because we don't believe her, but we only force her to deal with it in one way, and that is chalitza, in order that she doesn't get herself into trouble, that she's made herself a surah now. We can't force her to marry the Yavam. So we'll say, okay, do chalitza in order to take care of the chazakah that you left, that you were chayevet in Yibum. But on the other hand, don't do Yibum because you said that there's no need for Yibum over here. So, b'choshishin lidvareha. Now, the Gemara is midayek, but this is a bayis diuk out of the Mishnah. Lidvareha hu d'choshishin. We worry about her words. Haladivrei tzara in choshishin. But if her co-wife had said something, we wouldn't worry about it at all. That's the diuk out of the statement, even though there's no co-wife in this picture, and even though there's no statement of a co-wife. The diuk is that choshishin ledvara, which seems, according to Rashi and Tosafot, it seems that the wording is extraneous. It was not necessary to write choshishin ledvara. Had you simply written bali v'achar k'ach b'ni choletzit v'lo mityabemet, we would have known that that's exactly what we're doing. We're being choshish ledvara, and we're only allowing chalitza. The fact that the Mishnah specifically says choshishin ledvara, that's completely extraneous. So we must learn something out of that. What do we learn out of it? The diuk, that we worry about what she says, but we do not worry about what her co-wife says, and that means it's like Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon basically bifurcates the din between the woman who's speaking, and she's nemenet the gabei herself 100%, and she's 0% believed the gabei the co-wife. And that's what we're suggesting over here, and that's what he says, the loch, like Rabbi Tarfon, that we split the din completely, and she can eat truma, just like she can't get married and get her ktuba. Right, next Mishnah. Kidesh achat michamesh nashim. He married one of five women. He presented Kiddushin to one of these five women. He doesn't remember which one, or there was some reason that it was unclear as to what happened. He doesn't know. Each one of them says it was me that he has the Kiddushin with. He's got to give a get to each one of them because they basically made themselves chatichot asurot by saying that they're married to this individual. So in order to release them, he must give them a get. Now the truth is, if he wants to marry them, he can go ahead and marry all of them if he so chooses. He'll just have to present Kiddushin again, Misafek, and then he can marry them. But if he doesn't plan on marrying all of them, he needs to give a get to all of them, at least four of them he needs to give a get to. Then, Meniach Tuba Benehem. And when he gives them a get, he's got to pay out the Tuba based on that get. So he puts down the Tuba between them and says, you guys, work it out. Mr. Lake, he leaves and says, it's your problem. I mean, all four of you are lying over here, and therefore, it's really not my issue. I only have to pay one ktuba. You figure it out between you how we have to deal with this issue of the ktuba. Now, as far as the ktuba is concerned, this is a ktuba min ha'irusin, which we do not have. We do not have a ktuba min ha'irusin unless it's specifically agreed to. Unless we specifically agree that there is a ktuba min ha'irusin, then there is no ktuba min ha'irusin by default. It only happens, ktuba goes into effect once there's nisuin. So the ktubah's effectiveness is only at nisuin, and then you only have to pay for ktubah if you divorced from nisuin, not if you divorced from erusin. So according to that, you would have to suggest the Mishnah here is a case where they agreed that the ktubah would be payable by the erusin. Otherwise, you wouldn't automatically get the right to collect on your ktubah out of the erusin. That's Rabbi Tarfon's suggestion, is to have to solve the problem here. He simply puts it between them and lets them work it out. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Enzo derech motzi midei avira. This is not the way to get out of the Avera. And we'll have to deal with what Avera was done over here. Number one. And number two is, this is let's say Lidei Shamayim. If he wants to be Yotzei Lidei Shamayim, then he's got to give all of them a ketubah to be sure that he paid back whoever he owes the money to. So Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Why this Mishnah is found here is because of this phrase. Enzo Derech Motzei Midei Avera is similar to the phraseology that Rabbi Akiva used in the previous Mishnah that's relevant to our parak. Then, Gazal Achad Mechamisha, he stole from one out of five people. Ve'en Odem Ezo Gazal, he just doesn't know who he stole from. Kol Achad Omer Oti Gazal. Again, each one of them says he stole from me. So Meniach Gzela Benehem Umistalei Tivir Rabbi Tarfon. So here we have him admitting that he has one gzela in hand, but vis-a-vis the other people, the four of them are basically lying and saying that they're entitled to this gzela. So Rabbi Tarfon says, you put down the gzela, they shivet gzela shar gzal, he puts it down, and then they'll figure it out between them who is entitled to the gzela. Rabbi Kiva Omer again, enzo derech motzimi de averai shishalem lekol echad vechad. This does not get him out of the problem until he pays each one of these individually. He has to do veshivet gzela shar gzal by simply putting it down between them. He has not accomplished that mitzvah of Veshivat Gzela Asher Gazal. If he wants to be sure he accomplished the mitzvah, he's, let's say, Yidei Shamayim, he's got to pay each one of them to be certain that he is done with this situation. Now the Gemara says, Kidesh Ktani, Baal Loktani. It says over here that he had Kiddushin with these women, but he did not have Biyah with them. That's the first case. In the second case, it says, Gazal Ktani, that he stole Lakach Loktani. It does not say that he purchased it. Mani Matnitin, who is the author of our Mishnah, Lo Tanakama, Velo Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. It's not the Tanakama, it's not Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Tanya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Lo Nechloku Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Kiva, Ashikidesh, Achat Michamesh Nashim. That Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon do not disagree in a case where he has Kiddushin with one of five women. Veinu Yodea Izo Kiddesh, that he doesn't know which one of them that he had Kiddushin with. Sheminiach Tuba Benehem, Umistalek. He puts down the ketubah and says, it's your issue. That means Rabbi Kiva agrees in that case. Alma nechluku, where do they argue? Al shebaal, in a case where he did the kiddushin through biyah. He did not do the kiddushin through kesef, but rather through biyah. That's where they disagree. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, miniach ketubah benehem umistalek. Rabbi Tarfon says the din is the same in this case. It's the women's issue. They got to deal with it. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva Omer, ad shishaleim lekol achat v'achat. He's got to pay off each one of them. Now Rashi says over here, why does he got to pay off each one of them? Because of the nature of how he generated the kiddushin over here. Since he generated the kiddushin through biyah, kevin asaba mase vigina ota bikiddushe biyah, and he denigrated her with kiddushin through biyah. He did a physical act towards one of these women, and therefore tzarich lotzi atzmo midei avera. He has to get out of this avera litein lukulan. It's not enough that he simply gives a ketubah and says, you work it out. The fact that he physically engaged with one of these women already makes it that he has a much higher threshold or burden here to take care of this issue. And he's got to take care of it by making sure the woman that he slept with gets a ketubah. That's the way Rashi describes it. Most of the other Rishonim, most everyone else, says that the problem here is that he violated the Isur Derabanan of Kiddushin with Biyah. Even though Mina Torah, Kiddushin with Biyah is permitted, Rabbanan said you're not allowed to do Kiddushin through Biyah. Since he violated Nisa de Rabbanan, Rekone said that he should have to pay a ketubah to each one of them. So for either of those reasons, we're saying that he must take care of all these women because he did something that was not just simply a question mark or led to some sort of unresolved issue. He did something that was seriously wrong. And therefore, he's got to deal with it. Either because he engaged physically with a woman, and that means he must deal with her directly and not just say, work it out yourself. Or because he did something wrong, which is that he violated the Isur D'Rabbanan, and therefore he rekones him to deal with it. That's the first thing Rabbi Shimon Elazar says. The second thing Rabbi Shimon Elazar says is, Lo nechlechu Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Kiva, ad shelakach mekach michamisha bnei adam, ve'en yodea meizem lakach, ser meniach dmei mekach b'nehem u'mistalek. Again, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon don't disagree in a case where you purchase something. You agreed to purchase a certain item for one of five people, and they all say that they sold it to him. So in that case, Rabbi Kiva will agree with Rabbi Tarfon and say, just put it down, and he's done with the issue. So then, where do they argue? He only argues in a case where he stole from five of them. And then, what do? Each one of them says that they were the ones that were stolen. So Rabbi Tarfon says the same solution, just put it down and let him work it out. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ad Shishalem Gzelado Kol Echad VeEchad. Till he pays off each individual over here, he's not Yotzei because he was Gozel. Again, he did something wrong. Zela is something wrong, and therefore, he's got to deal with his Veshivet Gzela, Sher Gazal. The case of Mekach, he didn't do anything wrong. He was engaging in a transaction. They lost track of the transaction. Now you have four people lying about who the transaction was with. And therefore, he says, I put it down and let them work it out themselves. Over here, he can't say that because he has an Avira on his hands. He stole, and therefore, he's got to deal with the fact that he stole. But what you see is that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon are in these two cases. The case where he did Kiddushin through Biyah, Baal, and the case where he did with Gezel. The Gemara now says that, Rabbi Shimon Elazar be'kidesh, v'lakach lo plige, that he says when there's simply Kiddushin, or simply a transaction, there is no argument between them, Michlal de Tanakamo, Savar, that the Tanakamo disagrees with them, plige, thinks that they argue in those two cases. So Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? E Tanakamo. If it's the Tanakama, Litnei, Kidesh, Vilakach. The two cases of the Mishnah where Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon argue should be in the case of Kiddushin, which we have in the Reisha. But the Sefer should be in the case of Likuchin, in a case where he's transacting, not in the case of Gezel. If Rabbi Shimon Elazar, for Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Litnei, Baal, Vigazel. Should be a case in the Reisha where it's Bila, where R says Kiddushin. And the Sefer should be a case of Gezel, which we do have. So half of the Mishnah is like the Tanakama, half of the Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So Gemara says, no, the Olam Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. It is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Umay Kidesh. What is it that it means here, Kidesh? Kidesh bi'biyah. Doesn't mean Kiddushin as opposed to Biyah. It means Kiddushin with Biyah. So then, why do we have these two cases here to tell us the difference between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon? Just write one of them. Tana Kidesh. Shodicha kocho to Rabbi Akiva. It's come to teach you the power of Rabbi Kiva. Davagav the Isur de Rabbanan Avad. Even though he only did an Isur de Rabbanan here, Kanis. Nevertheless, we penalize him and say he's got to pay all of them back. What was the Isur d'Rabbanan that he violated? So Rashi says here also that he had Biyah with this woman to produce or to create the Kiddushin. And that is an Isur d'Rabbanan because Rav is Mangid Aman de Mekadesh b'Biyah. Rav used to give Makol to anybody who did Kiddushin through Biyah. Even though it's a perfectly good methodology, Midoraita, nevertheless, the Chachamim thought it was an inappropriate way to engage with a woman. And therefore, they disallowed that manner of Kiddushin. So here he violated that Isur d'Rabbanan, and nevertheless, Rabbi Kiva says, penalize him. There's a knas just for violating an Isur d'Rabbanan. Now, everybody I saw so far says that that is the violation of the Isur d'Rabbanan. I was going to suggest that the violation of the Isur d'Rabbanan over here is the fact that he didn't see her before he had Kiddushin with her. The Gemara in the second paragraph of Kiddushin says that it's proper for an individual not to marry a woman through a shliach because he should see the woman before he marries her. Now, to call that an Isur d'Rabbanan, I don't know if you can, but it is another thing that he violated over here. Now, that happens to be true whether it was with Biyah or whether it was with Kiddushin, but it still would explain Rabbi Kiva's Chiddush in the first part of the Mishnah, which is there's a violation of this suggestion mid d'Rabbanan. I didn't see that. We can keep looking, but maybe that's a possible explanation over here. Then, in the Seifa, it says, Tana Gazal. The Sefer talks about Gezel, Udiacha, Kochol, the Rabbi Tarfon, to tell you the power of Rabbi Tarfon. The Afagav, over here, Isur Doraita, Avad, over here, he violated an Isur Doraita, Lokanis. Nevertheless, Rabbi Tarfon says, let them work it out, it's not your problem. So there, even in the face of an Isur Doraita, violation of an Isur Doraita, we're not Konisim according to Rabbi Tarfon. So that's why we needed both cases, to teach us the Din, the Gabe Rabbi Kiva, and to teach us the Din, the Gabe Rabbi Tarfon. Alright, next Mishnah is a Mishnah that we've quoted before, at least pieces of it. Part of it on the first half of today's daf. Aisha shalchahi ubala l'midinat hayam uvna imahem. They leave town, her husband, and her child. Uvat v'amra, she comes back and says, Meit bali, v'achar kach meit bini. My husband died, and then my son died. Ne'amenet, in that case she is believed, because she is not changing the status quo. When she left, she was p'turah from Yibum, and when she came back, she's still p'turah mi'yibum, because she says her husband predeceased the child. That means that she's p'turah mi'yibum. Since she doesn't change the status quo, she is believed. And as far as her husband passing away, she has believability there, so that's not the question. With the son, we don't believe her, but her statement doesn't change what we would have otherwise assumed, and therefore it's fine. Meit bini, v'achar kach, meit bali. If she says, my son predeceased the father, predeceased my husband, then ain't an amenet. Then we worry about the fact that she's not telling the truth, because as far as her husband passing away, that's fine. But the fact that her son predeceased her husband, that we do not believe her. She doesn't have Nemanut there, and there she's trying to change the status quo. She left with the son, and then she was p'tura mi yibum. Now she's telling she's chayevin in yibum because her son predeceased the husband. But even though we don't believe her, we worry about what she's saying because she really made herself into a chatichat isura. And since she's a chatichat shel isura, she's choletzet velo mitya bemet. She can do chalitza but not yibum. We force her to do chalitza not yibum. Nitamli ben bimnidinat hayam. I had a child born overseas. Ve'amra. And then she says, meipini, v'achakach meitbali. This is what we just quoted on the Amud Aleph. My husband passed, my son predeceased my husband. The son died first, then the husband. Ne'emenet. She's believed, because again, she's not changing the status quo. She left here being chayevet in Yibum. She comes back saying that she's chayevet in Yibum. So it's a pesher usher, pesher hitir. She's the one who says he had a child. She's the one who said that the child died. Okay. That's it. Out of the picture. On the other hand, made bali, v'achakach made bini. The father, the husband, predeceased the son, ain't a nemenet. In that case, she's not believed because she's changing the status quo. She left being chayevet in Yibum, and now she's trying to be poter herself from the Yibum by saying that her son died after her husband. But again, we worry about what she's saying because she made herself into a chaticha asura, and therefore, choletzet velo mityabem. We force her to do chalitza because she left under that chazaka. But we will not allow her to do Yibum because she said that she's not able to do Yibum over here, that her son died after the husband. Nitanli Yavame Bidinatayam. They go overseas, she, her husband, and her in-laws. And then her mother-in-law has a child overseas. A new brother-in-law is born to her overseas. So then she says, Amra Meit Bali V'acharkach Meit Yavmi. She says that my husband passed away first, and then my brother-in-law. Or Yavmi V'acharkach Bali. Or the Yavam passed away, and then my husband passed away, ne'emenet. In that case, she's believed in either instance, because basically what she's saying is, my husband passed away, that she's believed about. As far as the Yavam is concerned, she's not believed. But it really makes no difference, because when she left here, she didn't have a Yavam. So as far as we're concerned, there was no Yavam beforehand, and now she's saying there's no Yavam afterwards. So great. As far as we're concerned, the Chazaka stands, and whatever she said is a Pesha Asu, Pesha Itir, we don't worry about it at all. Halchayu balav vi Yavama. On the other hand, if she went out with her husband and her brother-in-law overseas, then Amra made Bali Bacharkach Yavmi. She says, my husband passed away first, and then the Yavam passed away. Or Yavmi Bacharkach Bali, or the Yavam passed away, and then my husband ain't an amenet. In these cases, she is not believed at all. Because when she left here, she was Chayevet in Yibum. There was a Yavam that existed. When she goes overseas, now she comes back and gives this information. No matter where the Yavam died, whether he predeceased her husband or after her husband, she's now released and doesn't have to do Yibum. That she doesn't have any nemanut for, to say that her brother-in-law passed away. She's not believed. She'ena isha nemenet lomar, meit yavmi, shitina say. She cannot say that my brother-in-law passed away in order to free her from the obligations of Yibum. V'lo meit achuta, shitikanes lebeito. And she cannot testify the fact that her sister passed away so that she can go marry her sister's husband. Because sisters are only asurin, or to be wives, when they are alive. If she comes and claims that her sister passed away, she's technically muteret to her brother-in-law, to her sister's husband. She is not believed in those cases because the believability of the woman and why she's nemenet here is because of aguna. And the aguna heter, or dispensation that was granted by the chachamim, was only for her own husband. It's not the gabei, any other parties over here. And that's why she's not believed the gabei the Yavam, and she's also not believed the gabei her brother-in-law, her sister's husband. A man is not believed to say, my brother passed away in order to perform Yibum with his wife. And he can also not say that his wife passed away in order that he can marry her sister. So again, in the case where the husband says that the Yavam passed away, that will be good enough in terms of the wife of the Yavam. She will be released based on that testimony. But for him himself, that won't do anything because he's not believed in that situation. Because an Eid Echad is Neman, the Gabay, husband passing away. So over here you have an Eid Echad coming and saying that the Yavam passed away. So his wife is released. Now in terms of himself, he's saying, oh, now there's Yibam involved over here. So we will force her to do chalitza. We will not allow Yibum to go through because of the potential that he's not believed by Gabe, this woman. So vis-a-vis the woman herself, she's released. But vis-a-vis he and the woman, over there, they'll have to perform chalitza, no Yibum, because he's not believed in that instance. And the same thing with regards to his wife. He is not Ne'eman. The Ne'emanut was granted to the women, not to the men. So a man who comes back as a single aide is not believed to say that his wife passed away. Since he's not believed to say that his wife passed away, he can't marry the sister. Because that has no ramifications in terms of the sister or about anyone else. It only has ramifications for himself, and he's not believed in that instance. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, what is the din if a person is mizakeh through a third party, a get to his wife, where there is a yavam alive? The concept that is being used here is what's called zachin sha'adam shalofanaf. You're allowed to do something that is meritorious or for the benefit of another individual, even without their consent or acquiescence. On the other hand, you cannot be chavin ladam shilo b'fanav. You're not allowed to obligate an individual when they're not present. So in general, we would assume that a get is not something that is good for the woman. When you grant a get to the woman, she's now divorced, and she loses out on being married, and she loses out on all the privileges of the tubana being married. So if the husband wants to grant her a divorce, she must be the recipient of that divorce, either through her agent, or through her property, or she herself. She doesn't have to agree or acquiesce to the divorce. We can do it about korcha, but nevertheless, she still has to be the recipient of the divorce. On the other hand, when you have a case where it's a zchut for a person, you can accept that item on behalf of another person and say, you know, this is really good. I want to lock you in. So this happens when you have a present. When you want to give a gift to someone, the granting of a gift is not obligate the individual. It's simply saying that here is a gift. They can't come back and say, oh, you promised me a gift, give me my gift. How can I make sure that the gift is locked in? Someone else accepts it on your behalf. A third party comes along and says, listen, I'm taking this gift, I'm making a kinyan on this gift for the benefit of this other party. Now that's a zchut. It's a zchut for this individual because now you forced the matanah to be locked in, and of course he wants that. So you're doing it on his benefit. We do that by Shabbat. You can't give gifts on Shabbat. Before Shabbat, you give the gift to a third party to accept on behalf of the hosts that you're going to on Shabbat, and therefore it's already theirs before Shabbat, and you're not gifting on Shabbat. So a third party can accept when there's a benefit to the party they're accepting for. If it's an obligation, they can't do it. So in this case, where if he simply wanted to divorce his wife, if he gives the get over to a third party not related to his wife and says, accept the get on behalf of my wife, it doesn't work, because that's an obligation, that's a chuvah, and in chavim na'adam shelo b'fanav. You can't force an obligation on a person not in front of them. The question here is that there's a yavam. There is a brother-in-law, and since the brother-in-law exists, this get will save her from yibum. So now, do we say the get is a zchut or a chovah? Is it a chovah because now she's divorced? Or is it a zchut because now she's protected from having to perform yibum with her brother-in-law? So say, for instance, in a case where the husband's traveling overseas, let's make it a case where this is plausible, and he wants to grant the get to his wife to protect her in the case he doesn't come back, in case he dies. So he grants the get, but she's not around, she doesn't have an agent around, he hands it to another party and says, accept this get on behalf of my wife. Does that work? Does that get that divorces her now protect her from the yibum and she's going to want it and it's a zchut? Or is it now divorced and she doesn't want to be divorced and therefore it is a chovah? That's the question that Rova posed to his Rebbe Rav Nachman. And now he explains the two sides to it. Kevan desanyele zchutula. Since she hates her yavam, it really is a zchut for her and now she's very happy to have this get be accepted by someone else. V'zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. You're allowed to acquire things on behalf of another individual, even when they are not present. Odilma came into Zimnin derachmalei. There are some times where she kind of likes her brother-in-law. Therefore, chovula. Therefore, it would be to her detriment if you have a get be given on behalf. Ein chavin la'adam shelo b'fanav. And therefore, you would not be obligating an individual shelo b'fanav. It's interesting that Rava presents the case as simply meaning that whether she does or does not like her brother-in-law, not from the dissolution of the marriage. I mean, that could be the chovah here, is that she prefers to be married than the risk of the yibum. And therefore, she would opt to stay married versus the risks of the bad of yibum. And that could have been the safek here as well. But he presents it as being a safek of her relationship or the nature of her relationship with her yavam, whether she likes him or doesn't like him. Which one is it? Does the woman naturally hate her brother-in-law or does she naturally like her brother-in-law? Yamalei Tanina. So Rav Nachman says back to Rava, it's our Mishnah. V'choshishin lidvareha. We worry about what she said, and she does chalitza and not yibum. Our Mishnah stated that in two cases. In a case where she was obligated in yibum, and now she comes back and says basically she's not obligated in yibum anymore. But also in a case where she went out being turah from yibum, and now she says she is obligated in yibum. In both those cases, the Mishnah said, Why do we worry about what she said? Because we have suspicions about her lying over here. Why do we have suspicions about her lying? Well, the two cases are opposite. One case, she's now going to be permitted to do Yibum. In one case, she's going to be restricted from doing Yibum. That means that we're choshesh for Dvarim, both in a case where she might like the Yavam, as well as a case where she may dislike the Yavam. We're worrying about what she says. We're worrying about her lying about that case. What does that show you? That shows you that it's a safek. We don't know about what the natural relationship is between a woman and her Yavam. There's sometimes where she likes him, and there's sometimes where she dislikes him. And therefore, we're choshesh on both sides because we just don't know. If we don't know, that'll be the same thing true over here. You cannot be zachim shadam shalob afanab because we don't know if it's a zchut. She might like him, she might not like him, and therefore it's not automatically assumed to be a zchut. It's not automatically assumed that this action is definitely to her benefit or definitely to her detriment. But since we have a safek, we won't say that the get is a get in this case. So Amar le Ravina the Rava, am zakeh get ishto b'makom ktata. So he presents the problem to Rava. Rava presented this to Rav Nachman. Ravina presents it to Rava, a similar type of case, which is in an instance where the husband grants a get through a third party, has the third party accept it, but they were already quarreling. There was discord in the marriage. Mahu, does the woman want the get because of the discord? This gets her out of the marriage. Or she still rather remain married. Since they are already quarreling and they have discord, therefore it's a zchut, and therefore a third party can be zocheh on her behalf, even though she's not aware of it. Odelma, over here, you have to change the gear sets. Tzavta de gufa adifla, that the companionship is more valuable to her. Remaining married is more valuable despite the fact that there's discord here. The fact that she has a companion, she has a husband, is more meaningful to her than the problems of discord. And if she does not want to get divorced, if that's the case, then it's a chovah to her. If it's a chovah, then you can't grant the get through a third party that has no relationship to the woman. So obviously, there are extremes in this case where the answer would be obvious. If she's in an abusive relationship, of course, the get is a zchuta, and we would assume that it's a zchuta. Here, obviously, we're talking about discord where it's manageable or livable discord that she's willing to overlook in order to have the companionship of her husband, not in a case where we're talking about some sort of psychological issue where she's blocked in the marriage, and because she is subject to abuse, she stays in the marriage despite the abuse. We're talking about here, where there's discord that is manageable or can be lived with. It's not the most pleasant of marriages, but she wants to stay in there. So in that case, is it zchut or chuba? Which one? So Tashma, he says that here we do have an answer, because Damar Reish Lakish, this is something quoted throughout Shas, a principle of the Gemara, Tav the Meitav Tandu, Militei Meitav Armalu. There is this colloquialism that says that it's better, Tov, Tav means the Meitav to sit, Tandu, as a pair. It's better to sit as a pair, milameitav armalu, to sit as a widow. The basic idea is, it's better to be married than not married. A woman prefers marriage over the alternative. And since she prefers marriage over the alternative, she will overlook certain things in order to stay in a marriage, because the marriage is so valuable to her. Now, obviously, this has to do with culture. In their time, as well as in certain cultures today, where divorce is looked very unfavorably upon, then in those cases, a woman might opt to stay in the marriage and not divorce because of the stigma of divorce or because of the situation. Once she was divorced, it would be very unlikely that she'll be able to get remarried. So in those situations, a woman might be willing to stay in the marriage, even though we would have suggested, maybe we would think she'd want to get out of the marriage, but she might, for an irrational, reasonable way, want to stay in the marriage because of this concept of tav lemeita ndu lemeita varmalu. In a society or a culture where divorce is considered to be almost the same as marriage, then maybe this does not apply because people don't see divorce as being something that has or carries such a stigma, and being married or not married is kind of the same. So in that type of culture, you may not have this principle. But I guess in the time of the Gemara, and what we would have seen probably in a normal society where divorce is not considered to be the best option, we'd rather people stay married. We say about the woman prefers marriage over being single, and therefore, in this case, even though there's tata, even though there's some amount of discord in the marriage, it's not the smoothest of marriages, she'd rather be married than divorced, and we say it's not as chutla when he hands over the get to a third party, and it's as if the get never went through, or she did not get the get. So, Bayamar, now we're going to have examples of this. These, again, are colloquialisms or some sort of sayings that reinforce this idea that a woman would rather be married than not. Which is Dishum Shemina Gavra Kursei Becharata Ramula. So a woman who marries a guy that looks like an ant, as Rashi says like this, he's a midget. So if she marries a midget, nevertheless, this woman who marries the midget, kursei, her seat, kisei, becharat, is amongst the noble women, Ramullah, they place it. Without the husband, she doesn't have the status of a married woman. She can't go out there and sit with the noble women of the city. So if she has a husband, that grants her a certain status. And because of that status, she goes out and sits amongst the noble women of the city. So if that's the case, she's willing to marry a midget just to get her outcome that she wants. So despite the fact that this is not the most appealing marriage, she nevertheless will go into the marriage because that's a better situation for her. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa suggests, the naftza gavra tikre b'sefi baba v'teitev. If her husband is a wool comber, a job that was considered to be very lowly, so even if her husband is the wool comber, b'sefi baba v'teitev, she'll sit on the threshold of the door waiting his return. Again, she's so happy to be married, despite the fact that he has this lowly position or this lowly job. She's so excited about being married, she awaits his return every day from the work. So again, she's willing to take this unappealing husband because being married is so appealing. That's one way to read it. The other girsa over here is not nafsa, but rather nafsa. Question mark what that means. Some describe the nafsa as being something like a turnip, or he's shaped like a turnip. He has a funny look to him, that it's describing his appearance, not his job. And therefore, it's again the same concept or the same idea, which is here this unappealing husband, she still waits and greets him at the door when he comes home because she has a husband now. Ravashi Omer, Dekulsa Gavra, Lobaya, Talfache, Lekidra. Now here, Kulsa, the way that Rashi is reading it, Dekulsa sounds like from the word kalas, which means to praise, but it's a Lashon Sagi Nohar. Dekulsa Gavra here means that there is something wrong with this individual. There is a problem in his yichus, there's a problem in his family, there's some questions about the individual himself. Nevertheless, Kulsa Gavra, even if she gets a man who has questionable lineage or questionable sourcing, nevertheless, she doesn't even need the basic items for her pot, like lentils. She forgoes the basic mizonot that she's entitled to just to have a husband. Even a husband like this who is questionable about his appeal. That's one way to read it. Tosafot says that kulsa is mocher klasei kruv, someone who sells the kelach, who sells the stalks of the cabbage. Again, it's something that is considered to be a lowly job. And similar to the previous one, even though he has this lowly job, she's willing to marry this guy with this low job and even not ask for mizonot because she's so excited to be married. Or, kolsa the kura gavra, I mean that here he has the stalks of a cabbage. She doesn't even need something to sweeten up her dishes anymore, like the lentils, because she's so happy with her marriage. Again, all of these are expressions. The Rishonim have all different explanations of them, but the gist or the theme is all the same, which is, despite the fact that this husband is somewhat unappealing, the woman is excited to be married, and being married trumps the issues or whatever is wrong with this husband, because being married is so important to the woman. And this reinforces what Reish Lakish says before. Again, the colloquialism is reinforced by what Reish Lakish says. It says, better to be married than to be single. But now we have a little qualification of that. Betana, b'chulan mizanot b'tolot b'alehem. All these women have znot, and they blame their husbands. So what that means is one of two things. One possibility is that they married unappealing husbands. They married them just to be married. So now what's going to happen is that their eyes are going to wander somewhere else to something more appealing. And therefore there's a likelihood that when they marry these individuals, they will be mizaneh because of the unappealing nature of their husband. But they'll do that, and tolot b'balehem, but they'll say that it was their husband's child, and they're fine. Or it could be that these women were already zonot or be mizaneh, but you can't really cover up when you're single. When you're single and you're mizaneh and you become impregnated, then you really don't have anybody else to blame and you get a shame of zonah. Or you are wandering around the city with these unsavory characters, these other zonot, because that's who you hang out with. Now then, if she gets married, if she's a zonah, it's a great cover for her znut, because she can continue to be mizaneh. And if by chance, or perchance she gets pregnant, she'll just say, it was my husband that got me pregnant, and she has a cover. She can look like she's a married woman and lives a life of virtue and stature, upright woman. And aside, she can be mizaneh and not have any aspersions or a stigma cast about her because the pregnancy can be blamed on her husband, and she doesn't hang around with these unsavory characters because she has a husband. So either one of those could be true here. the motives for this woman marrying someone unappealing are somewhat questionable. It's only to be married. Well, if it's only to be married, then there's risk that other things will happen here, which is there'll be znot. And therefore, you have to be careful when there are these unappealing marriages, what exactly the woman has in mind. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of the perek. Hadran alach, Aisha, shalom.